For people who are serious about saving energy, the deep energy retrofit is all the rage right now. Today, we'll find out what that means and if it's worth your time and money. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here to help us understand what a deep energy retrofit actually is and what kind of difference one can make. Bill is also ready to answer your questions about the projects on your to-do list as the weather warms up. Send your email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or call us 866-780-9100. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. The deep energy retrofit is the new thing for those who are serious about saving energy. And our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here to help us understand what that actually is. He'll also answer your questions later in the hour. Good morning, Bill.
Hey, good morning.
Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
Nice that we didn't have a snowstorm today, so you could actually make the drive and be in the studio.
Yeah, so, but I can't put my feet up on the desk like I do at home.
you can.
Oh.
I'll just have to clean the desk.
Yeah.
Later. All right. So a deep energy retrofit, what is that?
Actually, you know, it's something, a term that's just come up maybe in the last few years is we would always look at in the 70s, you know, of maybe doing a little bit upgrade in energy efficiency. And what we would do is we'd do some caulking and air sealing and, you know, put some little gaskets here and there, and nothing really big. And you know, we might get a little bit of good out of it, and sometimes we did some bad things. We would just go in and try to tighten the house up without really knowing, you know, maybe what the long term effects, even the short term effects of what we were doing when we were air sealing. You know, like maybe some moisture in the walls or mold or things like that. So the nice thing about a deep energy retrofit is it involves a lot of planning up front rather than just jump right into the issue. In the planning stages, you know, people have to look at, you know, am I going to already do some upgrades on the house? Am I going to be maybe doing new siding, maybe new roofing, windows, those things anyway? Maybe my wiring needs to be upgraded, you know, the furnace needs to be upgraded. You know, I don't have much insulation in the attic, those things. And then that kind of qualifies you for going a little bit deeper. And really, it's more of just a more thorough energy retrofit rather than just, you know, the term deeper.
Okay, so does it start with an energy audit? How do you get the ball rolling?
Yeah, the nice thing is, you know, if you've determined, you know, hey, this is maybe something I want to do. I'm paying way too much for energy. My windows are always wet. I mean, I've got all these things going on. Yeah, what you want to do then is you start off with an energy assessment. And most of the time what that involves is having a blower door test done. And, you know, for new homes and new additions, that is the energy code now. So you're required by state law to do that anyway for new stuff. But, you know, it's a really good assessment tool. So what happens is someone will bring this, it's basically a fabric door with a fan in it. They'll put it in maybe your entry door. Usually it's the entry door. And what they do is pressurize the house a little bit. It's basically, they could say 50 pascals. That's about the same amount as 50 Post-it notes. I mean, it's not very much different. So they'll pressurize the house, and they try to find any air leaks. They try to find any anomalies in the house that maybe, you know, it's right in plain sight, but you just seem to look over it all the time. You know, is it the windows? Are they leaking a lot of air? Is it your basement? You know, do you maybe have a dry sewer drain? I mean, there's all these things. But then in that assessment, they also realize, hey, you know, when we start this door up, we're pressurizing the house. So when we do this, we first have to go in the attic and make sure we don't have, say, vermiculite insulation, you know, that has all the asbestos in it. So they would, if they went up there before they fire the blower door up, they go up and they find out there's vermiculite. Now they can't do the assessment. That's the part of the planning. You know, you basically have a good checklist of things to do to protect yourself even during the assessment phase. You know, when we start this up, are we going to backdraft a water heater? They know what they have to shut off and take care of for the safety of the, you know, the homeowner while they're doing the testing, you know, things like that. But the nice thing is too is it gives you a starting point. a baseline. We go ahead and we check the house for leaks. We check the house for all these other things. And then when we're done, then you can actually sit, okay, we were actually able to cut this much airflow. But then now that we've cut that down, we've added ventilation for the bathrooms that we didn't have before. So we had all this excess moisture in the house. You know, we've now have our range hood vents to the outside, where before it was like a $30, recycling one that nobody ever cleans anyway. And then we kind of know from the very beginning what size furnace and ductwork that it may need. It may, in a lot of cases, what we're finding is you can change completely from the type of heating and cooling system you have. You may go, instead of that furnace with all the ductwork, finding out, say, like apartments and bigger buildings, when there's a series of apartments, they're using these wall mount mini splits, a ductless mini split. It's an air source heat pump. So there's, and the technologies are keeping up so much. But the thing is, you want to make that house healthier and more energy efficient. So you're looking at the health side first, even though it says deep energy retrofit.
Okay. So, all right, we're talking about the energy audit part. And I guess, I know that I can have my REC, my Rural Electric mm-hmm. Co-op, do an energy audit. There are places to turn for energy audits. Who's qualified to do a deep energy retrofit?
Well, that's a good question, because a lot of times you're going to have to, even in just general remodels, you're going to have somebody that has some experience. It's not like something that that you can just jump into, because there's so many variables in an older home. There's so many things that are unseen. It's not like when you build a brand new home, you have all these parts, it's like putting a brand new car together. But when you go to you go to repair an older car, you really don't know what's wrong with it. A lot of times you have to, assess what the problem is. So that's the one thing that you're really going to have to focus on. The idea behind, let's say, am I going to do it on the inside? Am I going to do it on the outside? So now you're going to have to find someone that's maybe really good at trim work, because you have really fancy trim work. So that you're going to have a real artist and maybe do that. But then on the outside, you may have someone that's really specifically good at, say, at siding and applying foam insulation to the exterior and windows. So it's kind of a real wider talent range and skill set range. Now, for the blower door tests and that, the state of Iowa, Fire Marshal's office, the energy code official there, has a list of people that are qualified to do blower doors and duct work. The list right now is fairly short because the trainings have just started. The Iowa Energy Center had some trainings. I participated in that with some friends a couple months ago, and they're going to have another one in April. So if you're interested, get a hold of them and find out about it. But they're just training you to do the blower door and then the duct blasting, which means is that you're checking the ductwork on the furnace to make sure that it's operating correctly, moving a certain amount of air to certain points at the right temperature.
All right. Now, if you get all of this information and you want to make your home more energy efficient, I mean, doing a massive remodel is incredibly expensive. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly difficult. But we're talking about remodeling from the outside, not from the inside, right?
Yeah, you can do either one. Okay. But the nice thing about a lot of the deep energy retrofits is they've taken the idea from Germany, where it seems like everything with energy efficiency starts. It went from Germany to Scandinavia to Canada and then kind of the United States. We would always get asked at conferences, why do you people always remodel from the inside and just make a big mess? Why don't you do it from the outside? Because you can pull the existing siding off. This is a house or structure that is, let's say, all brick on the outside. You don't want to do anything from the outside there, probably. Maybe a real fancy Queen Anne with all that, detailed woodwork on the outside. You may not do that from the outside, but just basically your normal homes of Iowa, is you pull the siding off. You can pull off the, if there is any type of insulation board, usually it's nothing to speak of. And you can actually access the walls from the outside. The nice thing is this keeps all the dust and all the garbage on the outside. So you can still, you know, be living inside the house. You can rewire it. You may even have some plumbing you may have to relocate from the outside. And the attic, of course, is, you know, above the ceiling anyway. So those, that's kind of considered the outside. So this would keep everything to the outside, and you would just build up the outside with more insulation, make it airtight from there. And do any improvements, especially on your windows at that point as well.
So if you are planning to get new siding and that kind of thing, that seems like a wonderful opportunity to make something like this happen. What kind of cost are we talking about?
You know, it kind of depends on what you're, you know, in your initial plan. You may say, you know what, we need siding and a new roof, so let's take care of the walls and the attic now. And then down the road, you know, we'll maybe do the basement. You know, you may have to, you know, look at your budget, because it's not that hard to take a home. Let's say that, you know, you have a fairly older home, maybe in the 40s, and a smaller home, and maybe it's only worth $45,000 to $50,000, and then you figure all this stuff up, and that might be $50,000 or $60,000.
Right.
So, you know, realistically, will I ever get that money back? So now you're thinking, am I going to stay here forever? And I'm going to really love the comfort side of it and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But yeah, that's why the planning phase, you really have to sit down and figure in. You can get a lot of estimates on this up front to help your decisions. But in some cases, you may be able to get a huge savings just by insulating the outside of your house with, you know, 1 to 1.5 inches of foam. It makes it more airtight. It stops a lot of the thermal bridging of the cold going through the walls. And then you just put your siding on, and that's, you know, that's not that big of a deal. Any siding person, you know, can do that. So you may want to just look at incremental steps because, yeah, it can. I mean, there's cases where I've seen, and even in magazines, they put $150,000 and so they can get, I guess, their name in a magazine. And it was only a $50,000 house to start with. I just kind of look at, hey, I'm sorry, but that makes no sense.
Right, right. The you know, there are so many people who will put siding on your house, and often, you know, you talk with somebody about insulation or whatever, and then they'll make a recommendation that Bill McAnally has told you, don't go with that product. So again, I mean, it comes back to, who do you trust, and how do you know that whoever you're hiring can pull this off?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. Now, just recently I learned that the best thing to do is get at least five recommendations, especially from non-homeowners of whoever you want to, or not homeowners, but relatives. Yeah, that's good. Smart. Dennis even got me on that one. So, you know, you're really going to have to do your research because you want to be looking at products that are made for Iowa, your part of Iowa, and you want to look at, you know, pull up at the, you know, Department of Energy. And I always just, whatever product, I always just find the product and I put failures or lawsuits behind it. And then I Google that to find out if there's any big complaints on a certain product or if it's not performing correctly.
So do your homework.
Do your homework.
Because
it's come back with all this information out there. You know, it's all on us now. It's not on, you know, the contractor.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Bill McAnally is here today. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. We've been talking about the deep energy retrofit. So if you have any questions about that, you're welcome to join the conversation. But also, if you have questions about any of the projects on your to-do list around the house, give us a call, 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Helen is on the line in Ames. Hi, Helen.
Hi, I seem to have some interference here, but my question was...
please enter the number you wish to call.
Oh, dear.
Area code first.
That's very strange. Okay, do you want to...
Very strange. I don't know what's going on. But anyhow, my house is, like, built in 1955.
You know what, Helen? I'm going to ask you to just hang up and call us right back, okay? 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And I'll ask this question instead right now. This is from Deb in Mason City. My ductwork that runs through my crawl space under my house is uninsulated, is it more cost-effective to wrap the pipes that are already there or replace them with new insulated ductwork?
Well, if it's an uninsulated crawl, that depends too. So if the crawl space is uninsulated, if it's uninsulated, you know, you'd want to have insulated ductwork. The other thing is you would want to have someone make sure that the ductwork is the right size to put the designed amount of air to the rooms you're going to. Use rigid insulation, you know, the metal insulation, and have that insulated and make sure that all the seams are taped very well, that none of the inside of the lining of the insulation has been nicked or cut during installation. Make sure all the seams, and that means the length seams of the ductwork as well, is all sealed with mastic. It's usually a brush-on product or a mastic tape, any of the tapes like a duct tape or a tape that's just silver. Even though it says UL listed, it doesn't really mean anything when it comes to sealing ductwork. It has to have a mastic substance to it. Usually the best thing to do would be to insulate and, put a seal off that crawl space with poly and insulation anyway, and make that actually part of the building environment. But if you are going to put new ductwork and put in rigid, make sure it's sealed and then insulate it and make sure it's designed the right size.
All right. Let's go to Mike on the line in Fenton. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Charity.
Hi. What's your question?
I have a question. I have an older home, say late 1800s, early 1900s. My foundation in the basement is painted, and there's no insulation or anything or drywall to speak of. And I've seen the spray insulation that people have done in the basement. So I was curious if you guys had any thoughts on that.
Yeah. Is it a stone foundation?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It's not raw stone. It's like cinder block, for example.
Oh, it's like, okay. We used to just spray a foam directly onto either it was stone or the cinder block. But now what's recommended, especially by Department of Energy, is that you put something like a drainage medium and then spray the foam to that. So one of the products that we've been seeing and done some research on is called Keen Drywall. It's KeenDriwall. Take a look at that product. There's other products like it. It's just that's the one that I've used before. And what they're doing is they're draping that over the foundation wall. So it's attached to the top and then draped. And then you spray the foam, your spray foam insulation to that. And then the moisture can drain out the bottom and go wherever because, still those walls that old is going to probably have moisture come through and hard water come through. And then you can handle that once it gets down to the floor, but at least then you can insulate the wall and the foam is attached to this drainage medium. So it makes it a lot healthier as well.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet,
all right,
thanks.
Mike, thanks a lot for your call. And let's go back to Helen. Hi, Helen. Hi, Helen. Can you hear me? Helen, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. What's your question?
My question was that my house is probably built in 1955, and that paint keeps peeling. And I'm 81 years old, and I had an estimate from people to put siding on. It's going to be like $12,000. And I called a painting place, and they could do it for about $3,000. So I figured I'm going to live to 84. Should I go ahead and just have them paint it instead of spending all this money on siding?
Well, the reason the paint is coming off is we learned this a long time ago that the moisture inside your house is going through the wall. That's very normal. So the vapor goes through your wall, and then as it goes out, the first thing that it hits is the paint. That the first thing it can't get past is the paint.
Uh-huh.
And so then, yes, it will peel it off. I remember our house, my mom painted at least every couple of years, and big flakes of paint would come off. And, mm-hmm. We thought it was the paint. So that's the decision you're going to have to make, because it will just keep repeating. In some cases, it's been found that if you put a vapor retarder paint on the inside, that it may slow that down. You may not have it happen. But that's why you see so many houses, especially the 50s and the 60s, why they have vinyl siding on them now, mm-hmm. or steel siding, is because the paint kept coming off, and it was the easiest fix.
Yeah, my husband used to always say because of cedar boards.
Yeah, I know. My dad always blamed it was redwood, so they all blamed everything but what it was, you know.
I really don't want to spend that much money. Would it be okay if I just had it painted every 3 years?
Is yeah, that, yeah, there's 2, nothing.
2,000 times 3 would be 6,000 3. That's, I could get it painted for 8 years.
Yeah, yeah, there's no problem with it. No problem with that at all. I mean, it isn't going to hurt it any.
No, and I don't have that many relatives to leave this house to, you know. Well, it's not that great of a house. It's probably worth $100,000, and that's about it.
Oh, $100? Well, you know what? You can adopt me right now, and I'll, if you want to get rid of it.
I don't. I have to have some place to live.
Oh, okay.
I live in my home, but I got thinking, why should I spend all this money on
right.
deciding when I can paint it? For
yes.
these three, because the guy told me it probably lasts about 3 to 4 years. So you take that 3,000
yep.
times that,
right.
I'd be better off getting it painted.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh,
there
thank you so kindly.
You bet. You bet, Bye. Helen.
All right, Helen, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. I hope your mom's not listening, Bill.
Yes, she is.
She's yeah. very offensive. Try to switch families on the show
yeah,
today.
Well, there goes my Christmas present.
Exactly. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tweet us at IPR Talks and email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Home Improvement Day, and you can join us with your questions. Jason is on the line next in Ottumwa. Hi, Jason.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Good. Hey, we're looking at doing an addition, about a 1,200-square-foot addition on an old farmhouse. And I know we're going to go with a 2x6 exterior walls and probably go with full spray foam insulation for the insulation in them walls. I have a contractor that has posed the question of going ahead and adding another additional, like, inch and a half of the foam board on the exterior wall.
Right.
Or on the exterior before the siding goes on.
Yep.
Am I going to gain anything by doing that with the six inches of spray foam on the interior?
You know, that's another really good question, because actually the best bang for your buck is that foam on the exterior, because it slows tremendously that thermal bridging that goes through the 2x6 studs. Because even with the foam, you know, a really good installer, let's say they fill that cavity very well, there's no gaps, there's no voids. When you look at that wall with an infrared camera, you're still going to see every one of those studs and all of the plates and everything. That really does make a big difference to have that on the exterior. That was supposed to be on 2x6 walls, supposed to be in the energy code for Iowa, but they amended it back that you didn't have to. But everything that I've done from the 80s has always had a minimum of 1 inch foam on the exterior for that reason. He's right. That really is a good bang for your buck right there.
Okay. And then the other question I had, another contractor, I've got several contractors bidding this project. He was kind of against the idea because we're probably going to use a hardy board siding. And he said that he has had trouble with just that added length, having to use that extra length of a nail to get through the siding into the studs to hold it on. Have you seen any issues with the siding itself, you know, having any issues with the siding itself with that extra insulation in between there and the stud?
That's why they sell longer nails. That's what I usually tell them. I have no patience for that excuse. I'm sorry, but
okay.
Like I say, ever since the 80s, we did 1 inch foam, and then we put a half inch a rain screen board, and so there's an inch and a half plus the siding. Since the 80s, we've been putting that on with a little bit longer nails. And the other thing is all of the cement boards, if you start really researching them now, pretty much they're all recommending that you have a rain screen behind that, over even if it's over OSB or if it's over plywood or over foam. Cement board should have a drainage plane behind it, a rain screen, so when the moisture goes through that siding that it's able to dry out the bottom. In fact, we were just on a commercial job for the Economic Development Authority, and they were using the Hardee's panels, and they had to, by the manufacturer told them, they had to have a space behind that, and so they had to put 3/4 of an inch space behind it.
Okay.
But,
okay.
Yeah, they make nails. I'll tell you what, they make nails to put cement board over 8 inches of foam. It's just, you just have to go find it. So,
okay.
Yep, yep.
Thank you very much.
You betcha.
All right, Jason, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Julie is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Julie.
Yes, I have a question about the tankless water heaters, the efficiency of them, and then their point of a usage. Do you still end up having to run the water on and on and on and on to get the hot water from point A to point B? And then my second question would be is, what about the retrofitting with the geothermal water furnaces?
Okay. Well, the first one, the tankless, you know, that's why they usually have point of use tankless, you know, so it's very quick to get there. And a lot of times you'll have your lines insulated as well, depending on how it's set up. The only problem we've ever seen with the tankless ones is if your plumbing isn't really up to speed for a tankless. Maybe you have some half inch or 3/8 lines where they may have to be upgraded. And then it also depends on how good your water is. Some communities really have very few of these tankless water heaters because of the upgrade or upkeep, because of the type of water that's going through them and causes them a lot of maintenance issues. You know, if you're talking about, you know, the geothermal, are you talking for heating and cooling? Is that what you're talking about, or for water heating?
I'm sorry. There, Julie, you can respond now.
Oh, for heating and cooling.
Oh yeah, you can retrofit your home, and then you can have that for heating and cooling, and then they can have a superheater in it that, you know, helps to also heat your hot water. You know, there's a lot of tax incentives, there's a lot of rebates. So when you get it, the initial bill, they're usually, you know, they seem to be in Iowa pretty high. But then when you figure all of the incentives, a lot of times they're right in there with any other type of heating and cooling system.
What is your experience or knowledge on the water furnace versus other geo?
Well, that's what, in fact, you mentioned that brand. I've used that brand before. We have that in a family member's home. My house is geo. When I was at Iowa Central Community College, everything we built from 1996 till when I left, every building and every residence, all we built was all on geothermal. We were very happy with it.
Okay. Thank you.
You betcha.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And here's a question from BG. Does vermiculite absolutely have to be removed before an energy auditor retrofit? And if so, how much does it cost to do so? So many older homes do have vermiculite, and some say the asbestos worry is overblown.
Well, I wouldn't say the asbestos is overblown. You know, that you can encapsulate it, but, you know, the recommendation, and I have to go by what the recommendation is. The recommendation is, if it's there, then have a person that's qualified in asbestos removal handle it, because, you know, the common carpenter or homeowner has no business messing around with it. In fact, even in the little binder that I have with me here today, a tremendous amount of information on what happened in the vermiculite when it came from the Libby mines in Montana to Minneapolis, St. Paul area, and then was spread out throughout Iowa, that the insulation that had so much asbestos came from that particular mine. And when you start looking back at all the asbestosis and the deaths, it just makes you really nervous. And that's one product that you don't want to be messing around with.
Okay. Not overblown.
No, I don't feel it is. There's a lot of products, a lot of things that are, but not that one.
All right. Judy's on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
My question is about the exterior of my home, which is stucco. It's a smooth stucco. And in recent years has developed some hairline cracks, which causes the paint to continue to peel. So instead of painting it this time, I was thinking about whether or not I could put siding on it. Can I put siding over a stucco finish?
Sure. Sure, you can. A lot of times what they'll do, they'll put a layer of foam first and then the siding, you know, to help insulate the walls. Because if the house is usually the, you know, was it built in like the 30s or 40s?
It was built in 28.
Oh, that's pretty close.
Yeah.
You know, they don't really have much insulation in the walls anyway. And so if you're going to side, then go ahead and insulate, put some insulation on the outside. when you put the siding on.
And it doesn't destroy the walls on the inside, which are plaster. I mean,
not generally. There's a really good point, is a lot of times it depends on how thick the stucco is. It may just be a kind of a thin coat. But then if it has plaster on the inside, you want to make sure on anytime somebody's smacking around on the outside of your house, if you have paintings, if you have shelves, if you have anything that might possibly get hurt when it hits the floor, then take it off the wall when they're working there. And usually, no, they're not going to be a problem. And if it's super hard stucco, I doubt that it is there. But if it's super hard, a lot of times what they do is they just use an air nailer, which drives it through so fast, or they pre-drill it. Yeah.
Okay. I was just concerned about the interior walls.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually there's not an issue with it.
But it's okay to, there's no moisture problem if it's all sealed in.
No, because those walls are so, the nice thing about stucco is it's very leaky and as far, not, I shouldn't say very leaky, but it's very forgivable. Okay. It's a very healthy type wall. Yeah.
All right.
Watch that.
Yep.
All right, Judy, thank you so much for your call. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment, and Bill McAnally will answer more of your questions. So you can join the conversation at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send, you can also call us, is what I meant to say. You can call us at 866-780-9100. You can send Bill a letter. 866-780-9100. It's Home Improvement Day on Talk of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Home Improvement Day today. With me, Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert. He is here to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And next up is Don in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Don.
Good morning. I have some general questions about an exterior of a home, mildew or possibly mold on siding, on under the soffits, and also even on the shingles.
Okay.
How dangerous? What can we do about it? How do you prevent it? Et cetera. Mildew aside, and paint the whole issue.
Yeah, you know, really, you can find. If you really do some research, you can find some organic mildew sides, but generally that, you know, are you around a bunch of trees?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Generally it's just, you know, it's just mildew and that growth on the outside. There's a lot of different, that's kind of a horticulture almost day. Good question to ask, but, you know, there are a lot of cleaners and a lot of inert type cleaners that will take care of the mildew. It's just going to be kind of an ongoing maintenance issue that, that, you know, it's a little bit of a sacrifice to live where, you know, where you are and what the conditions are. I don't feel it's anything to really worry about. But I would, when you're using it, maybe wear like a Tyvek suit and a mask and gloves. But there are some organic ones, and I can't really name any of them right now, but you can research some of the mildew sides that aren't harmful at all.
Okay, but when you see mildew, are you ever worried because of that about mold?
On the outside, you know, generally not. If it's on the inside of the house, then I'm nervous because, you know, there shouldn't be that much moisture on the inside of the house for that mold to build up because the mold needs, you know, the right temperature, that needs the food, and then it needs the moisture. On the outside, especially if you're in the shade, a lot of times you are going to see some mold in that, it may just be something from specific trees that's just growing on the outside and on your shingles. Some people will put galvanized flashing at the top of their roof, so as the water washes down off of it, you know, it kind of kills some of it too. But I would start, you know, maybe researching on some, you know, organic type cleaners.
Yeah, well, I was a victim of the umbrellas damage to a locust tree.
Okay.
And that locust tree is partway over the roof. Is that, and we just now finally got it settled after 3 years. But And so there are still some dead branches up there. Would that add to the staining and mildew on the roof?
That'd be a good horticulture day question there.
not Bill's expertise, yeah. But Don, thanks a lot for calling. You can call back tomorrow
thanks,
on
Don.
Horticulture Day and get the rest of your question answered. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Bob is on the line next in Des Moines. He has a question I know you are itching to answer, Bill. Hi, Bob.
Yes. Hello?
Yes. What's your question?
Well, it's basically, like everyone in Des Moines who's been on the line, I have an older home from the 20s. I retrofitted with the HVAC system in the 90s, and we didn't do much in far as improvement on insulation, but we have still the old windows, and for some reason the heat doesn't work because it seems like it's engaged. If it's set 60 degrees outside, no way is it going to heat my inside of my house when it's like 60 degrees inside.
What you want to do is get back with your heating and cooling person. And, when they did the sizing of the furnace that went in there, or they, take a look at the existing ductwork, mm-hmm. you want to have ask them if they did a manual J and a manual S. And really what that is they would have walked around the house and figured out what the R value is of the walls, the condition of the windows. It's sometimes kind of hard to do on an older home.
Yeah.
But was it
a manual J or an S?
Manual J and an S.
And is there a temperature sensor outside and where the condenser is?
Normally, everything is handled from the inside. The condenser out there just works when it's called on.
It shows me on my. Indicator that the outdoor temperature, so it must have something like that.
Okay,
that's related to I freeze to death inside, and then I come outside, and there's people in tank tops and flip flops because
you're gonna have to get them back and say, hey, something's not working right. No,
okay.
You're getting a false reading or something there.
By the way, our house is not stucco, but it's cement, and I highly recommend cement out on the outside because it forgives all sins.
Does it have the siding kind of look to it though?
It's just cement, like looks like troweled on.
Right. Okay.
But it's not stucco with the little bumps and sort of kitty litter mixed in. It's just basically cement.
Right.
And,
okay.
And it forgives. My mother.
It is. It's very forgiving.
Paint forgives a multitude of sins.
Yeah.
But this stuff isn't even painted, so it's just like cement.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, Bob, thank you so much
for
your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And here is an email from Laura. She says, I bought a 1920s house last summer with a concrete block garage built into the front of the basement. The walls leak, and part of one wall has shifted on the footings, but the house inspector had nothing to say about it. However, a basement specialist saw it and said, wow, one hard freeze and the whole corner could collapse. It got through this winter just fine. What do I need to do, and how do I find out if it's really something I need to take care of?
I'd call the inspector back first and say, hey, how could you possibly miss this? Because that should have been handled when she bought the house. They're licensed, they're insured. And sometimes, it's easy to miss something. But if a concrete block person or a mason looks at it and they're a little bit nervous, then a lot of times it's well worth the money to hire a structural engineer to have them come over and take a look at it and get, it's going to cost some money, but you're going to get an honest third person opinion, and then they may tell you, okay, this is what you're going to have to do to fix it. Because concrete block is really good vertically. I mean, it's very strong perfectly straight up and down. But when it starts to move and it starts to shift, or if it bows, it has very little strength. It's like taking a pop can. And when you push the top of a pop can, you know, it's really hard to push down. But if you crinkle the sides in a little, you can crush it, or it'll move. So I would get somebody on that right away, because if we do get some heavy rains and the soil expands, you know, then you could possibly have a real issue. I hate to be scaredy about it, but I'd get somebody there as quick as possible.
All right. This is an email from Ingrid in Ames. We live in historic old town, so we can't just do anything we'd like, but we don't want to use asphalt shingles, one of the two largest landfill wastes. We looked at recycled rubber shingles, EcoStar, which would cost more than $6,000. Any suggestions for nice, less expensive alternatives?
You know, really, I personally like steel. Because it's long lasting, and there's some really good ones, really good brands out there. Really look at the warranties to make sure that they're transferable. The ones that are shingle style, they fit in very good with the neighborhood, and I know they're expensive. Some of the rubber roofs, early when they first came out, I know they had some issues with expansion and contraction, and so you may want to see if they've upgraded their manufacturing process to see if they've handled that, because they work in a lot of climates, but maybe not in the Ames area, you know. Personally, if you're going to put it on, you don't look so much at the first cost. Look at, am I going to have to replace it? So that's where steel, a steel roof, me personally, you know, that's what I would recommend.
Okay, and but if she has some historic restrictions.
Yeah, and in some cases, that's like a Decra or Girard, they make a steel shingle that looks like it's real. And
that's really come a long way aesthetically.
Yeah. You know, you've got to know that it's up there now. Before, it was pretty easy to pick away from a couple miles away. But but there again, the rubber would have too, because it doesn't look like slate when it's actually there, when people – and it had problems with it curling as well. So, you know, that's what I would do. I know it's expensive up front, but you're not going to have to replace
it.
Yes.
In your opinion.
Yeah.
Okay. This is from Scott. My question is, I have a broiler in my house. Does the geothermal system work with a broiler?
A broiler?
I'm sorry, a boiler. It says broiler. I read broiler, but it's clearly a boiler. Sorry.
Guy's doing a lot of chickens on on Saturdays, or what's going on here? I have no idea how it works with a broiler. Yeah, they do work very good with a boiler. It's just, you get a water-to-water system sometimes. But, you know, so what he's saying is he has a boiler in there. It just depends on how old the equipment is that the boiler was hooked up to. There's been a lot of changes in boilers, though, as well. So you may want to pencil this out to see if, you know, just replacing the boiler with a higher efficiency boiler when you pencil out against maybe going with a geo. With the equipment that you have there already, you know.
Right. I think this is the first time Talk of Iowa has fallen prey to autocorrect. So
yeah, because you know we've been talking about grease traps and everything about this one.
All right, let's go to John on the line in Fairfield. Another geothermal question. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Okay, I had a question about the geothermal, and if there's time, a yes or no question about stucco. But geothermal, I do some volunteer work up at the Neil Smith. Occasionally, and Megan up there, the naturalist, said they just had to have their whole geothermal piping underground replaced because of gophers. And
really?
I said, what do you replace it with? I mean, steel and stainless steel? And she said, well, the same, I guess it's PVC, but same plastic piping, but they buried it in sand. She said the gophers, the tunnels they dig would collapse and they couldn't get to the piping. But I'm kind of skeptical. I'm thinking they probably could in the winter time if the ground is frozen, they could dig right through. And I wonder if you've encountered that in your experience. And
you know, that's something I have never heard. I've never heard that of gophers, because I'm thinking, why would they want to chew on it?
Well,
anyway,
the liquid inside, she said, is not water. It's some kind of
It's an antifreeze. That might be. Yeah. Maybe it's, you know, they can sense that sweetness is there. I don't know. I've never heard that. That's, you know, it's funny, but since
something
I didn't have to replace
into,
it, but
right.
I have no idea.
It's not funny for the gophers.
No, them either, yeah.
Okay. Huh. Well, I thought maybe it was a common problem in Iowa then, but the other question is about stucco. Yes or no, does paint on stucco tend to last longer than paint on wood? Like on an old home.
It really if you put paint on wood, as long as you have space behind it, like a rain screen, it'll last on there till, you know, 20 years, till it fades. Okay. As long as it can dry, if there's no way for it to dry, you know, it might pop off just like Helen was talking about earlier, every 3 to 4 years. You want, especially on stucco as well, you want a very permeable type paint. And so when you do pick out the paint, tell them that it is on stucco and you want it very water permeable so that that moisture doesn't get trapped in the cement.
All right. John, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Mark in Algona. Hi, Mark.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I have a home, two-story brick home. It was built in 1870.
Wow.
And I've got a really crappy driveway. And my two questions are, as you know, in northern Iowa, the temperature ranges from about 110 above to 20 below. Is it realistic to put a cobblestone driveway in this type of climate? I see some of them, and they've heaved up and down. And then the second question is the garage door itself. It's just a typical single-car garage with an overhead door, and I'm wondering if anybody makes carriage doors that open to the sides that would look better for the age.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, the major manufacturers, garage door people in town, they may be able to find you an outlet. Otherwise, a lot of times when I want to find something strange, like, I shouldn't say strange, different, unique, I get on Houzz, H-O-U-Z-Z, on the internet. And then, cause a lot of times they'll have those pictures of them and then you can highlight it and find out where they bought the product or the manufacturer. Cobblestone is actually very forgiving. It's, for Iowa. In fact,
it's hard to shovel.
Oh, man. Like you're shoveling it. Gee. Okay. The cobblestones last very, very long. It's the prep work underneath the stone that causes the issues. That's why a lot of times, you know, the ones that don't do well is when they throw down maybe an inch of sand and throw the stone down and expect it not to heave. You really want to research the proper drainage medium underneath it. And there's a lot of Charles City, West Union, they've had their streets replaced with brick. And you look at how the drainage is underneath it with sand and stone and then larger stone so the water gets away so that the frost doesn't get underneath there and heave it. It's a lot longer lasting. But, yeah, if it's a rough stone, if you're hand shoveling it, you're going to get mad pretty fast because you're going to be smacking one about every 4 inches. Charity's right. But if you hold the shovel a little flatter and it'll ride across it. But
it's a little bit longer driveway, and so I would probably – you know, obviously be having myself or somebody else use something to remove the snow.
Yeah.
And that's my other question was, on cobblestone, is there a way to put some kind of a sealant on it so you wouldn't be hitting it with the blade so much?
No, they just need to have their guides on the bottom of the blade. Some of them have the poly ones, and some of them have the round steel ones. It's just to make sure that it holds the blade up a little bit, you know, so that the guides underneath the blade are maybe 3/8 of an inch up off of it, and then you'll have to finish it off. That's a little bit of a penalty, but if you really look at it, even the ones where they've got the blade down tight, when they're set right, they're not having issues, especially like West Union. I mean, it's just gorgeous.
Okay.
So do a little bit more research, but they've really come around on the placement. You can buy it fairly reasonable when they come in. They set them with a machine. It's like a skid loader, and they set them down about pallet size, and just keep setting them down, and they can do their driveway just in a few hours. So there's some really good information out there on pavers and that.
What's old is new again.
Huh? Yes, it is.
All right. Well, we are out of time. Thank you to everyone who called. Bill McAnally, thank you so much.
Thanks, Charity.
Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, will be back again next month. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow is Horticulture Day. We'll talk about spring lawn care. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.